Hello, and welcome to the HR Means Business podcast, which is part of the HR Happy Hour Network. I'm your host, Mervyn Dinnan. Today, I want to look at European recruitment and talent acquisition trends. I'm delighted to be joined by the team from iSIMS, who will introduce themselves in a moment, but are a global talent acquisition business, and they have looked for the first time at what's happening in Europe in terms of recruitment, in terms of hiring, and I think there's some quite interesting findings that I would like to explore with them today. So I have Raya and Eric from iSIMS, and Raya, could you introduce yourself and explain to people what it is you do?
Sure, thank you for having me. I'm Raya Moss. I lead the Insights program at iSIMS. If you're not familiar with the Insights program, we are a data research part of the organization that looks at the collective usage of our software and how it relates to talent acquisition trends, whether that be through applicants or through companies, and who's hiring, how are they hiring, where are they hiring. To give you a sense of the data set that we look at, we have about 6,000 companies inside there and all of their hiring data, and about 150 million applications coming through the system last year. So a large scale of data that my team then gets to publish research reports to share with the public, our customers, and the community on what we're seeing as trends happening right now.
Thank you. And Eric, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Mervyn. So I'm Eric Jollet. I'm the SVP Sales EMEA. I joined iSIMS 1 year ago, so quite recently, but my background in HR / recruiting / SaaS is roughly 25 years. So I spent my last 25 years in tech companies and addressing the recruiting. And I see some trends and some evolution in the recruiting world, but most of the companies are still struggling hiring the right talent. So that's very interesting to see that.
It's a global issue. Now, Ray, I'm interested because this is the first time you've actually done your insights, particularly in Europe. Was there a reason that you chose Europe this time?
Yeah, we have been publishing insights reports. I've been at iSIMS over 7 years and around since I started. In 2020, we started publishing a monthly workforce report, just really trying to help the whole world know what was happening during some wild times. And then we've been really expanding our footprint as a business in Europe. We're happy to have Eric join us a year ago and really building out a team over there. And we have some incredible customers over there that the demand was being asked constantly. How can we get some of these reports tailored specifically to the European market? So we are excited to really dive in this year and publish some specialized reports to that geography.
Okay. Now, the what's interesting about this is that the BBC have picked up on your research, and so the first question I'm going to ask you is come from one of the things the BBC have led on, which has caused quite a bit of debate in what I call the digital narrative on various sites, and that is that in Europe more women tend to apply for jobs than men, whereas in North America it tends to be more men than women. Did you find any reason for this?
It's really interesting. We talk a lot about, I joke, I have a background in data and math, but I think it would have been better suited to have a background in psychology to look at a lot of these things. There's so many external factors at play that really affect the dynamic of somebody interacting with the career site. And if you really go down to kind of the software side of it, that's what we're looking at here is when we look at the gender conversion rates is what we call them, right? The percentage of people that apply for a job when they look at a career, they look at a career site, look at a job description, what percentage actually go through and finish the application. There are a lot of dynamics of psychology to it. And we know that when you think of job seekers, it's two things, right? It's people that may be unemployed looking for work, but we also know that it may be people that are employed and then looking for their next opportunity. And that's where we do see a lot of shifts where in different geographies, there's different dynamics at play there. We know things like maternity leave policies have big effects, and they're very different in different geographies. It is really interesting. That was one of the points that we found. And just to share with everybody listening, if you look across the world globally, we see about 50% of applicants are male and about 50% are female. Obviously, very different numbers if we look at specific industries or hire types. But across globally, we see that about the application conversion rate I was talking about is 20% when we look for men. So about 1 in 5 men that read a job description will finish the application, but it's only 18% for women, What's interesting when we look at EMEA, though, and I think this is the number you're referencing, is that it's about 48% of all applicants right now are male, but 52% are female.
Maybe one word on that, Mervin.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with a couple of our CHROs and a couple of our customers, and they are diversity and inclusion is a key topic, and the parity between men and women is also a very key topic in the large organization. And probably because on the market most of the companies are looking for more women, it allows women to apply more to jobs than before, so they feel more confident, and because of that trend on the market, they are clearly feeling more pushed by the market to apply, and which is good, I think. And we are all, and it also probably, I don't know, I have all the data, but it depends also on the industry. So in services and finance and insurance, definitely much more women than into the old industry business. So clearly interesting to see also the trends per industry.
Sure. The I suppose it's interesting, and I think we get this probably both sides of the Atlantic, but a smaller share of women will apply to roles with, say, $100,000 or £100,000 plus salaries. But hires are split 50-50. Now, I know historically that it's often been said on other bits of research I've seen that, men will look at a job description. If they can do kind of most of what they see, they'll apply, where women want to know they can do everything they see on the job application before they apply. Do you think this is kind of now beginning to play out? So it you know, with fewer women applying, but actually technically, I suppose a slightly larger number of them actually getting the jobs.
Yeah, we actually researched a global look at that recently, and about 37% of jobs that typically pay, over a six-figure salary, the applicants are about 37% female and 63% male. But when we look at hires, it's actually closer to that 50-50 split, with about 47% of hires being female than male. If you think of the talent pool, it's fair to say roughly there's equal quality in those types of roles, for the most part. But what is interesting to your point is, again, that dynamic of women may be less likely to put their name in the hat. If you have, a laundry list of 20 things that are must-haves, not nice-to-haves in the job description, we do know that there's lots of studies have proven, right? It's more likely the man will apply even if they fit. I believe the number is 6 out of 10 or 7 out of 10, whereas the woman most likely wants 10 out of 10 to be a perfect alignment. But that's not what companies want. Companies are looking for diverse workforces, and there's much research to show that the more diverse you are from top to bottom, there's actual financial impact and better performance in the business. So there is sort of a dynamic of maybe less people throwing their hat in the ring, but that talent, if you assume those talent pools are equal split amongst those genders, companies are doing a good job of sort of sorting through that and not letting just necessarily quality make quantity. And what we're seeing is that they're actually looking through that quality and saying, we want to find the right talent. And they're ending up finding it being pretty 50-50 for the hire.
Oh, that's good.
You know what? I think the technology is also helping to get this balance of 50-50 because AI is clearly removing some bias, and it's helping companies to search on skills, purely skills and competencies, and less on the number of applicants. So because you get more choice, and because the AI is doing the job of qualifying, better qualifying, I think it's also helping to get this better balance.
There was also an interesting bit I noticed that the female candidates are less likely to apply directly from a career site. And there was something, I know there wasn't much in it, it was sort of, but women tend to spend slightly longer looking at career sites and researching the companies than men. I mean, do you think this maybe contributes towards the fact that women are kind of getting more jobs because they're putting a little bit more into the research?
I mean, we can't speak for the gender as a whole. I can speak to the dynamic in my house. I can say that, most things are done a little bit slower and more carefully by women in my home specifically. Yes, it is an interesting view that we found, that is that they're spending longer, they're interacting with, slightly more pieces of the career site. They're doing a little bit more research. That may go back to kind of that same dynamic of I want to make sure I'm a complete perfect fit as opposed to a pretty good fit. But yes, it's that part was very fascinating. I mean, it's interesting to put data to something that you kind of have an emotion around, a feeling that women are doing something in a certain way differently than their male counterparts. But it was fun to actually see that play out in the data itself.
There seems to be a slight mismatch at the moment, looking again at Europe, well, EMEA. There were a lot of applications. There seemed to be kind of a lot of traffic at the beginning of the year, but the hiring wasn't. The applications were higher, shall we say, than actual jobs filled. I mean, is this something you think specific to Europe, or is this something you're seeing globally?
This is actually specific to Europe, or a little, not specific to Europe only, but it's something that is differing from the global view. What we see across the global view is actually that applications, openings, and hires kind of cluster together pretty nicely. They tend to move, in a similar pattern, and that's where we'll see. When we do see even a slight shift, that's a big dynamic change. It's where we, saw things like labor shortages. But this was specific to EMEA. And I'm actually going to ask Eric, because as we were writing the report, we called Eric and said, is there something you're thinking in EMEA? I mean, this was a drastic difference between the number of applications in this space and openings. And then to your point, fills or hires happening in the space. So I'll let Eric, everything I know, I learned from Eric on this one. So I'm going to let him take this one.
Over to you, Eric.
I think the economical situation is completely different if you compare EMEA and the US market. In Europe, it's a little crisis compared to the US market, and I think that that's also why I know in the tech industry there is plenty redundancy plan, and plenty companies are not hiring slash freezing slash firing people. So that's probably why also the volume of candidates is increasing. So as simple as that, the economical situation is very different right now. So that's probably why we have much more applicants now than 1 year ago.
In the research, you mention or you use the line that the balance of power has shifted away from candidates. And employers, particularly in Europe, are kind of in the driver's seat because applicants per job tend to be quite high. Is this something that again is it maybe more specific to European organizations hiring, or is it something that's fairly global at the moment?
We're seeing that globally. The applicants for opening ratio, I know it's not the most common uses, but it is personally one of my favorite metrics to look at, is really if you could put a value to supply and demand of talent. And when we see areas that have struggled, think healthcare, education over the last 3 or 4 years, it's when we saw that APO number would be down sometimes in the single digits or even low teens if you think clinical healthcare positions. That's where you see that. Sort of the desperate employers, the I just need somebody, anybody. I need talent bad. Then you see, and I know Eric mentioned this earlier, software or tech type roles, and we've been seeing that number skyrocket. There's a lot of talent out there looking and a little bit of a slowdown in hiring. So then those two pieces together kind of make up that applicants per opening number. We've been seeing it go up globally for the last couple of years, which has been good news for a lot of our customers who've had a really tough time hiring. But yes, in EMEA, it has continued to rise. I'll give you a sense, it was 30 in February of 2023, and it's 43 now. So that was really good news to see that for your space as well. And as Eric was saying, it also speaks to job seeker confidence of feeling like maybe it is a good time to go find work or find the next opportunity if they are currently working.
Eric, do you have anything to add?
I think we still are, all companies are still struggling to hire a couple of very specific jobs. I
Yes.
think some, especially in the data scientist community, there is still some very highly researched people on the market, but generally speaking, yes, much more applicant in every industry. Even if companies are still fighting for few profile, I think they have more choice, which is good in a certain way. And it's also the paradox is also because you have more applicants, should you spend more time hiring people? So the time to hire is also, I guess we are going to talk about that, but the time to hire is also increasing a lot. And because the time to hire is increasing, you have much more applicants also. If you say, okay, let's hire in 10 days, then you will get less applicants. If you say, I give myself 6 weeks, 9 weeks before hiring, then you get much more applicants. Obvious to say, but that's the reality.
I think Eric brings out a really good point as well, which is just because you have the quantity coming in, you're not looking for, in general, this applicants per opening, right? So if you're looking for five people, you're looking for five people. Just because you have 20 or 30% more applicants, you're still looking for the same number of people. So that also brings around a different shift of new type of problems, I'll call it, right? Our old problems are becoming new problems again, where we're now having customers say, I have too many candidates. It's hard to find the right one. I'm sorting through unqualified candidates, or not the right candidate. I always say it's not about how many, it's about how fast can you find, to your point, the right one. And that can slow down time to fill. If it's helping sort of sort through too many candidates, it also can have a really negative effect on the candidate experience. To your point, if it's taking longer, if they're applying for jobs that maybe you're already almost through the process with the candidate, but someone else is coming in that they're going to hire, right? Someone else is coming in and applying, that candidate experience, I would say the good news is you have more candidates. The bad news is you have more candidates you're not going to hire. So there's a really an important sort of piece there to continue to maintain that candidate experience, both so that when that candidate applies for the next job at your company, they want to work there, but also we know there's a financial impact of a poor candidate experience, that that candidate may be your consumer and they may not want to come back and spend money with your business if they had a poor candidate experience.
Yeah,
Something
can
I've
I noticed with my customers is the fact that they are better using the technology that they have. So a couple of years ago, you, for example, managing a community of candidates, community of applicants, the what we call the CRM, candidate relationship management tool, that was not existing. And nowadays, before when they post a job, most of the companies they already have a bunch of candidates that are in their system, and they use that compared to 10 years ago when they were always starting from scratch. Oh, I look, I'm looking for a new marketing director, and they were always starting from scratch. Nowadays, they have this bench of people, they have this community, and they also add that community and all the previous candidates to their pool of candidates to one job, and it's adding people and very qualified people, which is, I think, smart and very interesting.
With increased numbers, the other side of the coin, and looking at all the digital sites, I've seen, particularly over the last 6, 9 months, obviously an increase in recruiters being laid off. Are we getting a bit of a log jam here because we're getting more people applying in Europe? We're possibly our internal, our recruitment teams, our TA teams, are maybe slimming down. We're talking about candidate experience now, which is such a key driver. Are we in danger of maybe losing candidate experience because we don't have the manpower, or are there ways that you see organizations trying to keep people engaged?
I would say short answer, yes. Long answer, we hope not, right? That is what we, this is where we hope technology can fill gaps. We, Mervin, I love the way you put that, right? We're seeing a lot of, and this is a global phenomenon, right? When you see reduction of force, when you see layoffs, one of the first to go a lot, unfortunately, has been those recruiters. If you're not planning to grow the business, like they are what people think of as a growth role inside the organization. And yes, we saw the same thing. I always say to our customers, we remember what happened in 2020, right? We had layoffs. Who were the first to go? Recruiters. And then in 2022, we saw all these headlines in every news outlet in the world, which is what was the hardest role to hire? What was the largest wage inflation in 2021 and 2022 was recruiters. And then now we're doing it again. And so there's this notion is of kind of, I would say, like, are we ready to hit the gas pedal again? Are you ready for your CEO? Just like Eric, I get to talk to a lot of CHROs and a lot of VPs of talent acquisition. I say, Are you ready to get that phone call again? That phone call you got, whether it be in late 2020 or 21 or 22, it was different in a lot of industries, but you're ready to get that phone call that says, hey, pedal to the metal, let's go. It's time to hire. Because don't forget what happened last time, which was I don't have anybody to do the hiring. So this is where we are at danger. If companies are not taking sort of smart steps right now, maybe you're not hiring right now, but it's a great time to build up the candidate pools. Because if these candidates are having these poor experiences now, they're going to have a bad taste in your mouth if you go to call them 6 months from now, because we've seen a turnaround in the economic situation and businesses are looking to expand again.
I think companies, because if you ask all, if you ask CEOs on the market, they will all tell you that hiring the right people is key for their business. I think that's a trend on the market, and which is very good, also, obviously. And I think when there is a crisis, the recruiters, there is a balance between internal slash external mobility, and most of the people, most of the large enterprise on the market are also much more looking for internal mobilities, which is also still the TA leader in charge of that. So, and when unfortunately their companies are decreasing the number of TA, I think the candidate experience is still a key topic. And again, back to the technology, with all the what you can do nowadays on the candidate space, on the way you interact with the candidate, the way you talk to candidates, the way the videos, all the tools that you have on the market, it's helping to keep a very high relationship with candidates. And that's what we do. But most of the companies are really, really conscious about that nowadays. No one is saying, oh, we don't care about candidates, we've got plenty. No one is saying that. So it's still a very key topic.
And I think that's where recruiter efficiency is key. If we have less recruiters and we have more candidates, then there's really only one option, which is to make those recruiters as efficient as possible, is to use the technology to still make candidates feel that they're getting a human touch or a human interaction, but slim down the time it takes a recruiter to have that interaction. And I agree with Eric. This is where I think AI has a really interesting role and will in the future. But it's also just pure technology of simple things, scheduling an interview. How fast can we do it? And that's where I think the tools come in play for teams that are kind of slimmed down or smaller, because as we talked about, there are more applicants coming in right now. There's no doubt. So even a team that's the same size has kind of more to do, more to process, more to get through than they did a year or two ago.
Yes. Now you've actually, I suppose, partially led me on to one of the last questions I wanted to ask, which was one of the other things that the BBC website picked up from your research was about the kind of never-ending interview cycle. They did a thing on this, and what we're talking about, obviously, more people applying, possibly less recruiter capability. Is there a kind of slowdown in hiring? There was something I know that I read around the research about kind of there are more interview rounds because of more, I suppose, remote and hybrid working. There are like virtual calls being added to face to face, and are we seeing this maybe becoming a much longer process?
You want, Eric's nodding. I'll let him go first on this one.
Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, so it's a trend on the market, definitely, to add more and more. Even for in the past, for a trainee or an internship, it's one, two interviews, and that's it. Nowadays, they do tests, they do background checking, which is new in Europe. We were not doing that in the past, so it's definitely adding a step to the processes. For if you take a sales job, we are always doing like a panel interview with the business case presentation. And you're right, Mervin, it's due to the fact that it's remotely most of the time. So because it's remotely, we need to be sure so there is plenty of managers involved, and we ask, we increase the number of interviews and for any job, any position.
But I think the benefit of remote interviewing, which may be a benefit, maybe not, is that I think about 5 years ago, and if I had an interview round at a company, I was taking an entire day off work to do it. And it was, driving to their headquarters or taking public transportation to their headquarters and getting there. And it was like a 4 or 5 hour thing. And it was my whole day off work. And, we made up an excuse to our current boss that we had a doctor's appointment, whatever that might have been. And now, if we want to add, hey, before we make this offer, I'd really like Eric to talk to this person. I need this person to take a 30-minute Zoom. It takes 30 minutes of their time. And so it's easier for the employer to say this one more person or this one additional ask because it's not carving out a whole day off of work necessarily anymore. It's, I just need 30 minutes. A 30-minute interview takes 30 minutes now. A 30-minute interview in the past took 8 hours of PTO. And I think that there's also that piece of it that has allowed some flexibility to say, I can think in the past, I'll tell you, sorry, actually, when I interviewed at iSIMS, I had an interview scheduled and it was, one interview round, but it was three or four people. And one of those people went on a business trip. So my interview was postponed 2 weeks. I think that changes now. Now it's okay, you talk to these three people and Al's going to call you when he gets back, or he'll call you from San Francisco. And so I think there's a lot of flexibility that's been added with this kind of remote type of interview as well that maybe didn't exist even just 5 years ago.
Is there a possibility, though, that now that we have that option, we're almost becoming a bit more indecisive about it because we can easily say, well, we don't have to ask them to take another day, to invest the time. We can just do a 30-minute Zoom call to suit them. That we start maybe bringing more people into the process, or we may be making it last a bit longer.
I think there's two pieces to that, and then I would love Eric's take as well. I think one, because we've been through so much in the last 4 years of businesses expanding and contracting and expanding and contracting, a hire may be a little bit more, and it should be, rightfully so, more of a commitment of let's make sure this is the right person. Because there's been a lot of companies have taken a lot of hits for doing layoffs or doing reduction in staff, and they really want to make sure, I think, right now more than ever, that this is the right candidate. That being said, I completely agree with you. You spoke about kind of the power dynamic or companies having an upper hand versus applicants. Maybe a year and a half ago, that wasn't necessarily the case, even though we were still in sort of this expand, contract, expand. Because when I talked to customers, it was by the time I make an offer, they've already got three others. And when we see applicants for opening, or I was telling you kind of that talent supply and demand, when we see the numbers go up, it gives employers a little more confidence to say, well, maybe if this doesn't work out and they already have another offer, that in that pool of 60 candidates I already have, there may be a one in there that's also just as good. And I think those sort of psychological shifts happen when you have more candidates kind of throwing their name in the hat, as opposed to, I'm hiring for registered nurse and I've got eight candidates. If it's right, I'm telling hiring managers, make the offer. There's no more what else is out there. I think that's where. When we see that APO number come up, we see a little more of those behaviors creep back in that were common 5 years ago, which is this candidate's fantastic. What else exists?
To complete Ray as well, I think nowadays, after the COVID crisis, people are not only joining a company, they are also joining a team. And they want to interview and talk to the managers, the co-workers, and different people in the team. It's very important for most of the candidates not to get the job, but to know the people they are going to work with. And this is very often I have candidates asking me, Eric, can I meet other people in your team? Blah, blah, blah. It's happening a lot, several HR people. And nowadays they have also to increase the number, back to the previous question, they also have to increase the number of people they talk to because they want to know more about and discover more about the company and people that you are going to work with.
No, I love that. I think that's a really good call out. Some of this slowdown in more interviews, I do think does and should come from the candidate side. When we were seeing those rush offers, how fast can we make hires? We then a year later talked about, wow, resignation rates have shot up, right? So this connection, a mutual connection, I like to say it's almost like dating. If I took a job, if I interviewed with a company, I met two people and they made me an offer, that would be a red flag for me as a candidate at this point, because I know how easy it is for me to talk to three or four more people. I have the power to ask for that now. And I think we see that coming from candidates much more now than we did 5 years ago.
And you're right. Back to the intro. The power is more. It's definitely not more into the employers. It's also on not even on the employees. There is a better balance between employers and employees, and the power. Where is the power? Because yeah,
And
balance.
candidate confidence, I think that's not being talked about enough anymore.
And I
When I
think
speak
it's.
to a lot of our customers, they say candidates are confident to ask for anything they want anymore, right? They'll ask for changes in where they work, when they work, how they work. It seems like everything's up for negotiation now. And I think there's a lot of shifts happening right now in candidates saying what they need in the process as well, not just here's the job description, here's where we'd like you to work and how we'd like you to work and how much we're going to pay you and take it or leave it. And maybe in the past they negotiated the salary side of it, but now I think kind of everything seems to be a little bit more up for negotiation.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you both. There's loads and loads of insights in this research. We will put a link to in the show notes to the download so people can download it. What I would ask to wrap up is to obviously for each of you, Rhea and Eric, to tell people how they can connect with you, but also if there was like one or two key takeaways of the whole conversation, what would they be? And I shall start with Rhea.
Sure. I am very active on LinkedIn. We put a video up every month of our findings of our research, as well as some of our bigger research reports. We have a couple coming out. So my first name, it's a little odd spelled, so I'll just spell it. It's Rhea Moss on LinkedIn. So definitely love to connect there. I will actually be heading over to Europe for Breakfast UK and presenting some. We'll be doing more research in the next couple of months. So also visit us at Breakfast UK. iCIMS is sponsoring over there as well. And I think my big takeaway, I warned you in the beginning of meeting you today, Mervin, as I told you, I'm a big data nerd, is just really using data to help tell a story. That there's so much right now out there. And I think, we love to see the data getting picked up by the BBC and by some of these news outlets because there's a lot of people feel a certain way, but it's really helpful, especially for talent acquisition practitioners, to have the actual metrics to say it doesn't just feel like we have more candidates. Here are really this research and these benchmarks that are bigger than just economic data points, but actually talent acquisition data to say, either what's happening to us is happening to everyone, or we've got something special going on and we need to double down on it.
On my side, I always like studies, surveys, because it's explaining also the behavior on the market from customers slash candidates. I think something that we did not mention that is also key for companies is the cost of hire, because it's an expensive job, and it's
Yeah.
very expensive to search for good candidates. And they want to be sure that they invest their money in the right way. So this is also all that kind of studies on and the power between candidates and employees and it's very interesting for the companies how they drive their brand awareness and how they can manage their cost of hire and because they need to take all of that into consideration. So I think it's really, really interesting for the companies to read that kind of data crunching data analysis on the market because it's helping them to drive their strategy for the recruiting and yes, happy to connect on LinkedIn. Happy we are also doing a very big event in UK, which is Recfest in July, so we will be there. It's more for TA leaders, but it's an interesting event. I've been there a couple of times and it's really amazing.
Raya, Eric, thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
It's a
Thank
pleasure.
you, Melvin. Have a good day.